Welcome back to Backbone Radio. Ross Kaminsky in the studio. 303-696-1971 is our number here. If you want to join the conversation, you can send me an email, ross@backboneradio.net. And you can also send me an instant message. If you go over to my website at rossputin.com, little page, little box there on the right side, you can type a message. It'll show up right on my screen. We have the privilege of being joined on our VIP line by Randall O'Toole. That's Randall with one L, O'Toole, from the Cato Institute. Randall's a senior fellow at Cato in the area of transportation and land use studies. And he wrote a policy analysis in just a couple of months ago, May of this year, it was published, entitled Crony Capitalism and Social Engineering, the Case Against Tax Increment Financing. And lest you think this is some arcane thing, you know, irrelevant to you here in Denver and Aurora, think again. Right now, the city of Aurora is talking about using a tax increment financing scheme, a plan, to basically transfer $300 million over time of taxpayer money to a private company for them to build a hotel and convention center right here in Aurora to compete with Denver. This matters a lot to Denver, too. Randall O'Toole, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time out of your Sunday to be with us.
Well, I'm glad to do it.
So why don't we just start first with kind of defining what TIF, tax increment financing, is. And then I want to get into some of the history of it with you, because that's very interesting as well. But first, let's define it.
Well, basically, tax increment financing is when a city will draw a line around an area and call that area an urban renewal or urban redevelopment area. And then they'll say this area is now producing X amount of taxes, say $1 million a year in property taxes or sales taxes or both. And then they'll say, okay, those taxes are going to fire and schools and libraries and things like that. But from now on, all the increase in taxes, all the increment after today, will go to subsidize new developments in this area. So let's say in 10 years, because of new developments, this area is producing $10 million a year in taxes. That's $9 million in new taxes, and all those taxes are being used to subsidize the new development. Well, that means that the fire and police and other services are still being needed by this area. The new development needs fire protection, needs police protection, but other taxpayers are having to pay for that, those services that are being used by the new development.
And so just to be clear, you know, when you said it goes from $1 million in taxes to hypothetically $10 million in taxes, where is that $9 million going?
That $9 million is going to subsidize the new development. Sometimes they sell bonds, and then they either use the bonds to buy land or put in infrastructure, or sometimes they just give it, the money, to the new developers. Other times they do what's called pay-as-you-go tax increment financing, which means they just give the money to the developers over the next 25 or 30 years as it comes in.
And I should mention, and we'll talk more about California over the course of this conversation, but I note in your document here, I mean, California is really in a league of its own in terms of how much TIF, how many bonds they've issued in dollar value and per capita. But actually, Colorado's second. I mean, it's a very distant second, but, you know, you take out California, again, in a league of its own. Colorado has issued the most TIF bonds from 2005 to 2010, and the most in terms of dollars of TIF bonds per populant, per resident of Colorado. So this is a big deal here, and I noticed several times reading your document that there were examples based right here in Colorado of various TIF schemes.
Well, California invented TIF in 1952, and so it's had the longest history, and cities just use TIF to gobble up more and more tax money every year until it got to be so bad that Governor Brown, that great fiscal conservative, Jerry Moonbeam Brown, the very first thing he did when he took office this year as governor was to propose to eliminate all TIF and shut down all urban renewal districts in the state. And believe it or not, the Democratic legislature actually agreed to do that. And so California now has zero new TIF after today. Meanwhile, Colorado, as you point out, is number two. And got some dogs here taking up my time. Sorry about that.
It's all right.
Anyway, Colorado is number two, and in states like Colorado, it's growing at 10% a year. It's the fastest-growing part of government in most states.
I should point out...
the reason why it's growing so fast is because cities can just do it without asking voters. It seems to be exempt, or they act like it's exempt from Tabor, the
exactly.
Taxpayer Bill of Rights, and they just spend money like crazy. Governor Brown said he was mayor of Oakland. He said when he was mayor, it's just like magic. You just get all this money. You get to spend anything you want. And in California, they spend it on paying elected officials. 10% of Brown's salary came from TIF money.
And there's a lot of other... Sorry about that. There's a lot of other bad parts of TIF. For example, to get the land, you know, how does that typically work? I mean, if there's going to be a big convention center here in Aurora, it's not like there's lots of vacant land right around here in Aurora. What do they normally do to get the land that they then have these developers develop?
Well, I'm not sure that eminent domain is going to be a factor in the Gaylord development in Aurora, but all the eminent domain controversies, like the Kelo decision in Connecticut, the taking of eminent domain was funded out of TIF. If you didn't have TIF, you wouldn't have those eminent domain controversies.
Right, so here I think they're using this blight designation. Why don't you tell us a little how that typically works?
Well, supposedly the money was supposed to be used to cure, to fix up slums, to cure blighted neighborhoods. And so the legislature, state legislature, has come up with some definitions of blight, and the planners will then go look at their community and claim that their community meets those definitions of blight. There have been cases where entire cities have been declared blighted so that they can make the entire city a tax increment finance district. There have been cases where cornfields in Wisconsin were declared blighted. And people even took it to court and said, this is a cornfield. It's not blighted. And the court said, if the city declares it blighted, it's blighted. So the definition of blighted, no matter how strict you make it, it turns out cities can find ways around it. San Jose even found a very wealthy neighborhood that included the congressman from San Jose, the home of the congressman, to be blighted because the leaves in the private tennis courts in the backyards of these houses had not been raked. So that was enough under state law to declare the area blighted.
Unbelievable. And they're going to have to use that kind of blight designation here as well to get this land. Now, you said you talked about California inventing it in the 50s. Tell us a little more about the history of how we came to get to TIF.
Well, in 1948, Congress passed a law that set up federal money to do slum clearance and urban renewal. And over the next 25 years, something like $50 billion of federal money was spent on urban renewal. Well, that wasn't enough money for California, so California passed this law that said you could take tax increment financing and use that for urban renewal. By 1974, it was clear that all the urban renewal projects, not all of them, but many of them had failed. Many of them had done more harm than good. They had displaced low-income people and forced them to buy more expensive housing. They'd replaced their affordable housing with high-cost housing. Many of the developments failed. And there are still places in eastern cities where they've, not just eastern cities, in cities all across the country, Boise, Idaho, still has vacant land that they cleared with, they took the land with eminent domain, cleared it with tax increment finance money, and said to developers, here you go. And the developer said, we're not interested in developing that land, and the land has been vacant ever since.
Amazing.
So Congress in 1974 decided to stop doing urban renewal, stop funding it. And at that time, only something like 8 states had passed tax increment finance laws. Within a few years, 15 more states quickly passed tax increment finance laws so that cities could continue to do urban renewal, even though the projects had, so many projects had failed. And today, all but one state, Arizona, has a tax increment finance law. At least one project in Colorado has failed so miserably that the city defaulted on the project.
So
but
when we come back,
the way the law is set up, it doesn't hurt the city's credit rating if the urban renewal district defaults on the project.
Right.
So
it's just the bondholders that lose. But you and I know, and we'll talk about this when we come back after this break, that really it's the taxpayers who do lose, even if it doesn't appear so on the surface in that case. So when we come back, Randall O'Toole, I want to ask you, why is TIF not free money the way its proponents claim? Stay with us right here on Backbone Radio. Welcome back to Backbone Radio. Let's get right back to it. On our VIP line, Randall O'Toole from the Cato Institute, who wrote a fantastic piece called Crony Capitalism and Social Engineering, The Case Against Tax Increment Financing. And we happen to have on the line with us, apparently braving from his road trip with his three young kids, my friend Jude Sandvall, who is running for mayor of Aurora and actually is the guy who told me about this particular story. Great to have you both on the show with me at the same time. Jude, meet Randall. Randall, meet Jude.
Howdy. Nice to be here.
So, Jude, just tell us a little bit. We're going through the basics of TIF financing with Randall, but tell us your understanding of the details of the Aurora proposal and your take on it.
Well, my take on it is that it's Aurora's own little economic stimulus plan. They found themselves a massive shovel-ready project, and they're ready to pony up.
So is it indeed $300 million, and is it $300 million, and is it going to be paid up front or pay-as-you-go kind of thing, or what's the deal?
Well, under the tax incremental financing, it's paid over, I think they've got it planned out over 30 years. It's a rebate based upon the increase in tax revenue that they're able to garner on the land once it's developed.
So let me bring you in here, Randall. I mean, Jude and I each went through a program here in Colorado called the Leadership Program of the Rockies, which really emphasizes economic liberty and free market capitalism. And even from a philosophical as well as practical point of view. And Randall, what's your take on this, on TIF financing, from the point of view of capitalism as a philosophy?
Well, you know, supposedly TIF is to help revitalize blighted neighborhoods, but that isn't happening anymore. Instead, what it's being used for is what I call crony capitalism, which means elected officials use TIF as a slush fund to give taxpayer money to favored developers who then make campaign contributions to the elected officials to keep them in office. So it ends up benefiting a few people at everybody else's expense. Urban planners jump on it because they love to try to manipulate the TIF projects to favor their ideas of social engineering. They think Coloradans should all live in high-density, mixed-use neighborhoods, and so they use TIF to subsidize these neighborhoods, particularly along the light rail lines, those neighborhoods end up having high vacancy rates in many cases because people don't really want to live that way.
And Jude, what arguments are you hearing in favor of this project, and why have the arguments not convinced you? I know you are not for this.
Well, obviously the argument is that it brings jobs and it brings an economic impact, a positive economic impact, at least in the short run to the area. But, let me just expand upon also what Randall said, and an additional issue that I have with it is that it circumvents the intent of Tabor that we have in our state, which requires us to vote on any increase in taxes and also any long-term bonding for any kinds of projects. Now, let me just make it clear, it's not illegal for them to do this tax incremental financing. It's a way around the intent of Tabor. And if this was such a fantastic deal, this greatest, economic stimulus, whatever you want to call it, why did they not give the public the time to vet this project. It was literally put on the city council's agenda on a Friday, and it was presented to the city council at their meeting on Monday and voted on them at that meeting without the opportunity for anybody to look at the 126-page agreement between the city and Gaylord Entertainment.
And how was the vote? What was the vote count?
The vote count was unanimous.
Wow. So, Randall, proponents of TIF essentially argue that it's free money. Tell us briefly why it's not free money.
Well, the development that generally takes place with TIF, it turns out, would have taken place without TIF in most cases. It just would have taken place probably somewhere else, maybe not in Aurora, but in Denver, or maybe not in that part of Aurora, but some other part of Aurora. And so you're not getting new development. All you're doing is shuffling development around. Plus, the agencies that lose the money, the fire and police and so on, end up having to spend money to provide services to the new development, and other taxpayers end up having to pay for that. A few years ago, the North Metro Fire Protection District had to ask voters for a tax increase to increase their revenues by $2.5 million. One of the reasons they explained why they needed the tax increase is because TIF had taken $1.5 million away from their revenue base.
And that's Denver, right? You're talking about Denver.
Well, it's just north of Denver.
Just north of Denver.
Glen, yeah.
Right. Wow. And so, Jude, is there anything that can – what could stop this now?
Well, let me just say, it's disingenuous to say that this can all be done without a tax increase, because eventually at some point, like Randall stated, there will have to be taxes raised somewhere. Now, it's not necessarily directly in line with or in conjunction with this project, but somewhere taxes, whether it's mill levy, sales taxes, will have to be raised in order to provide the services that are losing the tax base from this. Now, to answer the question you just asked, what can be done? Well, create an environment that is conducive to the success of all businesses, not just one particular business. Create a low barrier to entry, lower regulations, lower taxes, and give every business the opportunity to be successful, and more businesses the desire to come and locate to Aurora.
So, Randall, one of the things that I thought was really interesting in your document, I mean, there's a lot of different aspects. You talk about the crony capitalism, and we've just talked here about competing for dollars, but you also talk about the social engineering aspects that are often surrounding TIF, and not necessarily in the Aurora case, but I think it's such an interesting part of it. I wanted to ask you about it. Randall, do you guys, and Jude, do you have time to stay with me for through the news break at the bottom of the hour?
Sure.
So let's just talk about that for a second. We'll do a minute now, and we'll hit a news break. But let's talk about the social engineering aspect of TIF, because I think it's fascinating.
Well, I think Stapleton is a good example of that. When Stapleton Airport was closed, housing prices were growing really fast in the Denver metro area, and developers were eager to build housing in that airport area. But instead of letting them build the kind of housing that people wanted, planners zoned the area for high-density development, row houses and houses on tiny lots, even though most Americans would prefer to live in a home with a large lot. And then they offered $300 million in TIF financing to compensate the developers to get them to build the kind of housing that people don't want to live in instead of the kind of housing they knew they could sell. So without that $300 million in subsidies, Stapleton probably wouldn't have developed the way it was, and without the zoning rules, it probably would have been developed anyway, and it probably would have been developed with more valuable homes, providing more taxes, but it would have been different kinds of homes.
When we come back after this bottom of the hour news break, we're going to continue our conversation with Randall O'Toole of the Cato Institute and my friend Jude Sandvall, candidate for mayor of Aurora, talking about this massive proposed subsidy for a private developer here in Aurora. Stay with us.